music, art, health, science, ufology, religion, metaphysics, and all things spiritual. In short, we'll examine the truth. And when we find things that aren't right, we'll offer creative solutions. And now, the host of Evidence with Prince, Don Nikoloff.
Good evening, ladies and gentlemen, and welcome to Evident Footprints on BBSRadio.com. I'm your host, Don Nikoloff, and I will be with you for the next hour. So nice to have you with us on this February the 2nd on the West Coast, and February 3rd on the East Coast, and in the Central Time Zones. I had the pleasure tonight to appear as a guest on another network for about an hour and a half with Dr. Qasem Khalil, who actually is going to be our guest tomorrow night. And we began an expose, a very in-depth study of the videos released surrounding 9-1-1, in particular the World Trade Center and the Pentagon airplane trick photography that was done. And of course there are some people that are saying, well, it wasn't commercial planes, they were remote controlled planes. What we're seeing in the videos is that it's these images have been put into a composite format. They have been added to video that is absent of planes, and there are many anomalies occurring in the photography, or in the, actually it's not even photography, in the, let's say, the post-production of these fabricated films. We have many anomalies that are occurring, such as smoke appearing in one angled shot, but from another angle there's no smoke at all. Or the smoke is billowing out in of a very slim a slit of a hole, if you want to call that, where you just had supposedly a Boeing 767 tear through a building from one end to the other, which in and of itself is highly unlikely that that would even occur. But if it did occur, the anomalies that you see, such as the smoke stopping all of a sudden and just completely disappearing, again revealing the building, shows you that there are many aspects of these films or videos that have been altered. Now, they could charge that the people putting them out on the web are the ones doing the altering in an attempt to debunk their theory about the planes. But the own their own shots, the ones that the media used, are replete with exclamations from the anchors from TV and radio who say that there are no planes. They didn't see a plane, they saw explosions. There's a homemade video that we've talked about on other shows, produced by a couple named Bob and Bree from their Manhattan condominium or apartment, and you can see very clearly that the sky is blue around the World Trade Center, even with the smoke billowing out. And yet they've produced photos of a London-type fog of this haze all over the place. We see anomalies of a tree blowing in one direction and the smoke blowing in another direction. And I'm not talking about wind swirls. This is a consistent pattern of deception that is revealed by carefully studying the contents. So we're going to continue that. In fact, Dr. K will be on tomorrow, and we're going to talk about these video anomalies as well as about some of his health products and some homemade solutions to your disease, if you want to call it that. And so we're looking forward to Dr. K being on. Now, our guest tonight is a metaphysical scientist, also an inventor of sorts. He is a researcher. He has a very, very popular website, one of the most popular in the whole world, called educate-yourself.org. And he is my good friend, Mr. Ken Adachi. Ken, welcome to Evident Footprints.
Thank you, Don. So nice to be on with you again, and I always appreciate your kind words in your introduction.
Well, I was up all night writing that one.
Working
last
on it.
Night.
Well, I want to thank you for putting in the time.
Yeah. I think I have to go back and correct some of my grammar. I missed a couple of commas and periods there.
No, your grammar's fine, Don. I wish everyone who wrote me could write English as well as you do.
Yeah, just so we're not misleading the listening audience, I don't have a written word in front of me right now.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
Just the microphone. So,
right.
Well, how are you, Ken, after this long weekend?
Well, I'm good, thank you. And I did catch a little bit of the Super Bowl yesterday. I'm not really a big sports fan, but that game was unusual. And the last 30 seconds or 45 seconds or so was amazing.
Mm-hmm.
So that made it fun. I remember the first Super Bowl I saw in 1969 with Joe Namath. That was exciting. I missed some of them in between, but I probably won't be seeing more Super Bowls because the government is going to stop broadcasting an analog television signal on February 17th.
Actually, they made an announcement that they're going to try to get a couple more months for people to get their money together.
No kidding.
Yeah, I think it may happen in June now, May or June.
Well, well, well. Now, that is music to my ears. I'll tell you why. Because I had remarked when I put something up on my website about this high-definition TV conversion that if enough people did not participate, if it became obvious to our manipulators, our schemers behind the veil, that they would reassess this compulsory switchover if it appeared that enough people would simply not do the conversion and they would simply forego television. And you're indicating something to me here. I, of course, did not hear this prior to you just announcing that. So how sweet it is, how sweet it is. So let's see where it goes, because I've talked to a number of people who who adamantly told me, this is, I'm not switching over. Forget it. I don't need the broadcast TV. It's not a big deal in my life. And it's very nice to hear that. It's very nice to hear people aren't so enslaved to that boob tube that they just feel compelled to get these conversion boxes, which are, you know, getting digital TV is not a wise thing to do. Truot has already posted two or three pieces on my website and on other websites talking about the secret technology that is going to be applied using this digital capabilities. And you're essentially leaving yourself wide open to these psychotronic manipulations if you go digital. So my recommendation has been, until we can find some system that can effectively thwart the technology which Truot explained in his first essay, which came out in mid-December. The name of the essay is The Sound of Silence. It's called the Quad S technology. It was developed by the military, and it was used in the first Iraq War in 1991. And the application of a high-intensity form of this technology caused tens of thousands of battle-hardened Iraqi troops to surrender en masse. They simply didn't even attempt to fight, and they were literally kissing the hands and the boots of the Americans' forces as they approached them in these bunkers, waving white flags, etc. They did that because this technology was applied to them at a very high intensity, and they had no other choice but to succumb to the stress. And it's a very dangerous thing that we're talking about here, the use of this digital technology. What's being fronted for the cover story is that we're going to, well, presuming you get a high definition TV, you're going to have a much clearer, sharper, highly defined picture. And because they can now use a digital signal, they gain a great deal of bandwidth from the analog signal, and therefore they'll be able to insert additional sub-channels within the main carrier channel. So in addition, let's say to channel, I'm just picking a number out of my hat, say in addition to UHF channel 18, there'll be a channel 18.1, a channel 18.2, 0.3, 0.4, 0.5, etc. And they're planning to do the same thing with radio. I'm just beginning now to see promotions for digital radio, and of course the same argument will be used as to why they're doing it. Well, we're gaining, it's a much clearer signal, it's much more noise-free, and we're gaining all this additional bandwidth. Isn't this wonderful? That's the cover story. The reality is quite different. So people want to find out what's wrong with, or what's the problem with accepting digital TV in your home. Read the article by A. Truat called The Sound of Silence.
Mm-hmm. And regarding your reference to the Republican Guard, the soldiers of Saddam Hussein's army, mm-hmm. I was once asked by someone what that subliminal message might have been that they gave them to get them to surrender. Mm-hmm. And I suggested that it might have been something like, climb out of your foxhole, lay down your weapons and hold up your hands, and we'll give each one of you your own 7-Eleven franchise.
That would have done it.
It really doesn't matter what they said. It's the idea that they can get people, that many people at one time, to comply with a subliminal command.
Yes, but in fact it was more than that. There is such a wrenching of psychic and, you know, pain involved. There's literally these men were experiencing an event that they've never experienced in their life. They were thinking that, you know, the end of the world had come for them at that moment, because it was absolutely a shocking experience to go through, and mm-hmm. it's more than a matter of merely convincing them with an argument. They were under extreme psychic stress.
Yes.
So they thought they were going crazy.
Yes.
And so you had no choice. I mentioned in my little intro notes, these men behaved like compliant children. You don't do that unless you're shook to the core. And, you know, you have no defense, so you become like a child. That's mm-hmm. the way human beings act. When you're, you know, experiencing that much stress, people know that even in conventional combat warfare, when things get really tough, you know, you're exhausted and you're in great fear of dying, many men just cry. They just roll up into a ball and cry. They don't want to die. They scream out for mommy. It's the way human beings react when you're under extreme stress. So these guys, I wouldn't want to have gone through what they experienced. It'd be interesting to see if one could find some of those troops who experienced that and have them, you know, verbalize what they felt. That would be very interesting.
Yeah. Well, do we even know what happened to them? Because they showed us lines of these guys being marched, into either vehicles or just, you know, forced to march. And
that's a very good point. And as you probably know, the there was a killing spree on the road to Basra. The retreating Iraqi troops, white flags flying, we're you know, on this highway going back to Iraq, the road to Basra, and it was bombed, strafed, and they just killed all those men. They just murdered all those men. That's what the Nazis used to do in World War II. And yet we have American fighter pilots behaving, and not, you know, under command, of course, under orders, exactly the way Nazis treated retreating soldiers, or civilians for that matter. Nazis used to strafe civilians trying to flee a war zone. And of course they would, I mean, it's just appalling the way the United States military behaved in both the First and the Second Iraq War. It's not the United States that I used to be part of in the military, and if I was faced with the choice again at going in, there's no way I'd go into the military. Even if they drafted me, I wouldn't go in, because I'm not going to be a party to that. And people who are in the military need to think long and hard about what they're doing, and stop with all the with the flag waving, and think about what they're doing. So that wasn't the main issue, though, I wanted to broach tonight. I did want to mention about the high definition TV a bit. Just one more diversion, then I'll get into the main topic. I want to talk about the value and uniqueness of the radio shows that you have been doing for the past few months, and especially in the past few weeks. The quality of the shows are so, the importance of the information being aired is so important compared to the utter rot and pap we get on conventional AM, FM radio shows. There is no AM or FM station who would air this programs the way you do them, because far too suppressed information is revealed in these fabulous interviews you've been doing recently with Dr. K, with Jim Murray, with Michael Anthony, with just about all your guests. Every show is one blockbuster after another. And if enough people hear these shows, and I intend to make an MP3 available on my website for a large portion of these shows, if enough people hear these shows, they're going to say, my God, what have I been listening to on television and regular, you know, mainstream radio for the last 10 or 15 years, utter rubbish and rot compared to the clarity of reportage that's going on with your show. This is your hosting ability is at a very high professional level, but you are unique in that you are unusually well informed. Plus, you have special gifts in which you can intuit information, often amazingly accurately, and you have allies and friends who supply information which even put you higher on the scale of cutting-edge material. So I don't say that as much to merely stroke you for saying overly generous things about me in the beginning of these interviews, but I truly feel these are exceptionally high-quality shows that if enough people hear them, and that's why I want to make the MP3s available on my website, it could get to be a habit so that people could make a regular point of coming to the station and subscribe to the archive, so that instead of tuning in the regular mush that I, for instance, there's only two radio stations I can listen to in the morning, but I get irritated with both of them for different reasons, but because it's part good information, but a lot of spin as well, and the spin irritates me to no end. Whereby with your show, it's, I feel at ease, feel refreshed. I learn a lot of new info, you know, and I feel I'm a guy who's been looking at the New World Order game for a lot, but the caliber of your guest, like Dr. K, reveals a lot of information I was not aware of, and or it embellishes or, increases my data base on various aspects of the New World Order agenda. So I think the day is going to come, Don, in which your popularity is going to continue to go up. My guess is exponentially. As more people hear you, more people will come to this station, and I believe your reputation and radio show will spread. I think you're going to start getting syndications, even on conventional AM and FM. If there's enough people who are interested, well, we'll see there.
Well, I'm appreciative of your comments. I attribute the success of the show to the listening audience and of course, the teamwork between my guests and myself that we're able to focus on the topic somewhat, even when we're doing a potpourri of issues during a show. Mm-hmm. We seem to be able to follow the same train of thought. And the general consensus coming from the responses that we get from the listening audience is that they appreciate the work that we're doing, that they're learning the truth, and it's helping to dissuade the fear that they normally had when they face these types of issues before.
Right.
And that means or that indicates that we're actually dispelling the fear through knowledge, the knowledge that they gain. They're moving out of belief into knowledge, and at the same time, we're also attempting the best we can to assist them in looking at things from outside the matrix,
mm-hmm.
outside that control paradigm and that belief system. Mm-hmm. They're listening because they're already awake. And they listen to other shows on this network and on other networks, and they come here to hear what we have to say. So, it's what makes the show a success is a listening audience, for one thing. I can say that much. And it is growing, so I appreciate your kind words. Send your checks into. that's why my audience is growing. I'm not asking for money. You know, that's the different the difference. Although I encourage them to support the sponsors that we have because they make the show possible. Hemp USA, the Idaho Observer, are two. I will be picking up some more sponsors. In the near future, and there are a lot of really interesting things going on. I guess it's maybe because I'm kind of a multi-dimensional soul, if you want to call me that, and so I touch upon a lot of different topics from the point of experience, or just the in-depth research that I've done. And a lot of hosts don't even do the research; they rely on their guests to do that. So it's a different perspective, let's say.
Yep.
Now I'm finding it interesting in light of the remark that you just made that there was a show where Dr. K and I were talking about Barack Obama being Jewish, and I've come into some startling information that is going to solidify many of the conclusions I've already drawn from my research. I'm taking it to another level. And I find it interesting that when we make comments, such as the one that Dr. K and I made on a past show, that Barbara Walters came out and spilled the beans to the View audience the next day, as if that was somehow going to overshadow our comments on this show.
Right. That's right, exactly. And I've seen that before. And since you brought it up, of course, our friends in the military and so forth, and intelligence, they monitor shows like this. They monitor websites that hit nerves because they want to see what you know. And when you put up something that's revelatory, very typically, they will insert into their mainstream outlets, their Tavistock sanction outlets, which is what most, virtually all AM stations and most FM stations are, the counter story or the spin variation on what you revealed. Now, you just gave a very good example. I experienced something last summer. I was just happened to have on, I only get two public television stations on UHF television. I don't have cable. I've never had cable. I just received television reception with a set of rabbit ears and a little built-in amplifier.
Mm-hmm.
And the two stations here in Southern California have public TV are Channel 28, KCET, and the second one is Channel 50, KOCE. And they have public, NOVA-type shows and those documentaries, et cetera, that at least have some, quality to them. It's hard to find something on television that's satisfying, but at least those, I particularly like science shows, I like history shows, ancient history especially. It's a great deal of fun. Michael Woods from England has been doing a number of series on various civilizations. His current one is on India, but these are excellent documentaries. Although, while we're talking about public TV documentaries, I noticed of late, I just caught one yesterday or the day before yesterday, hosted by the actor Matt Damon, all about global warming. Very expensive production. I think it was 2 hours long. Very slick, very carefully edited, so that you came away from that show, you would come away, if you're a naive viewer, as most Americans are, you would come away from that show convinced that global warming is real and that unless we follow Al Gore's recommendations to curb our carbon footprints, the poor polar bears aren't going to have an ice floe left to float on, and it's just going to be terrible if we just keep on going. I mean, I'm just amazed to see such falsity promoted in such a slick and professional way, so that the naive, the unwary, the young, the uninformed, having a chance against this level of propaganda, no way.
Yeah, as I always say, Ken, thank God for global warming. I got 3 feet of snow in my front yard.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
It would be 10 feet if we didn't have global warming.
And I normally don't read local newspapers, but I just happened to buy the Sunday paper because actually I wanted to get the crossword puzzle. My wife and I were somewhere. We wanted to sit outside. It's warm here in Southern California. And so I bought the paper. I really just wanted the crossword puzzle. But I was amazed to see there was an article. It was about, it was a two-column article of this conventional independent journalist totally debunking global warming, Al Gore. I couldn't believe it. I didn't think such a thing existed in mainstream newsprint. But there it was. I have the copy. I plan to scan it. I plan to put it up on my website. And, just celebrate this event. Anytime you get mainstream newspapers broaching real news and the real subject, that's cause for celebration. So that's amazed me. This guy was just scoffing at Gore's whole dog and pony show and all these documentaries that they put together to embellish and reinforce this global warming propaganda. He just tore into it. I was amazed.
Well, they had to give him some kind of a bone because he relented when they stole the election from him.
Yeah.
And so
Yeah.
You know, they take away, you know, from Peter.
Yeah, from one, yeah, and then they give it to
Paul, you know.
And,
so.
Of course, it was a piece of cake for them to arrange to get him a Nobel Prize. So they had such a hard time to figure out what category to stick it in, so they gave him the Nobel Peace Prize. Isn't that amazing?
Mm-hmm.
And then, of course, the awards, the movie industry, I forget what they gave him, Academy Award or something.
Now, tell me, how does promoting a lie create peace?
Right, exactly. There is no there is no logic to it, and it should show, at least thinking people, the absolute hypocrisy of prizes like the Nobel Prize when, you know, this was a completely naked political plum that the Illuminati, you know, told that committee, Gore's going to get this prize. Figure out what category you want to stick it in, but Gore's going to get the prize. They were simply commanded to give Gore the prize, and they just followed orders. Any fool can see that.
Yeah.
So anyway, I don't want to dwell on this too long because I want to take the remainder time to talk about the hysteria and the hype that's being manufactured mainly on the internet about what we're led to believe is going to be a huge cataclysmic, earth-shaking, maybe world-ending event that's going to culminate in the year 2012, which is only 3 years away. And there are a number of websites that work this theme of something incredibly humongous is going to occur in the year, by the year 2012. Now, different factions have a different scenario for a cataclysmic world-ending or world-shaking event, if not world-ending. The Christian fundamentalists, evangelical, charismatic brainwashers that you find on Trinity Broadcasting Network or the Christian Broadcasting Network, the network of Pat Roberts or the network of Paul and Jan Crouch, TBN, and all the evangelical television hosts they have on those programs, John Hagee or Hagee, depending on how you want to pronounce it, Rod Parsley, Benny Hinn. There's a host of these guys. Jack Vanapee, who you can see on even regular VHF and UHF television stations. They're pumping a theme that we're going to experience what they are calling Armageddon, that there's going to be this huge cataclysmic war that takes place in the Middle East, and that it's going to be an all-consuming war that will involve the entire world, and that after the smoke clears, a lot of people will be dead. However, Jesus is going to descend from heaven and sit on a throne prepared for him in Jerusalem and reign as an earthly king for 1,000 years, which is also referred to as the millennium.
And some of those people aren't going to be around to see that because they're going to be raptured up into a cloud.
Well, I was going to get to that. But what's going to happen is that the storyline is that for those true believers, the ones who tune into Jack Vanapee, etc., and I'm not reviewing the story in the interest of mocking these guys. I have no interest in mocking people. The reason I'm pointing it out is that first I'm going to, you know, make it clear that it's, in my opinion, based on my perceptions, it's a crock. It's a fabricated theme that was assembled in the latter half of the 19th century by the British Round Table, and the inculcation of this theme was carefully planned so that what began with, let's say, brainwashing preachers into buying into this story, worked up in intensity and dedication so that by the 1940s, the Illuminati, I got this straight from the straight from Siskel Wheeler, who would know, she used to be in the Illuminati program. What they did in the 1940s is that the Illuminati infiltrated the charismatic, fundamentalist churches here in America, especially in California and in the South. For instance, Amy Simple Pherson of the 1930s fame in those groups, they were groomed to play those roles because they wanted to start to create this this mindset among Protestants that this event of Armageddon, the end times and so forth, was coming, and that in order to be prepared to, you know, experience salvation and to, avoid hell, etc., you better know that this terrible event is coming. So the hysteria sort of began in the late 20s and early 30s with those tent revival events. And then there was this active infiltration of charismatic troops, such as the Holy Rollers, and what's the name of another group that has the...
One character that comes to mind is Catherine Kuhlman, who was there in Los Angeles.
Right, exactly. She sort of inherited the Amy Simpleton Saracen role. And Benny Hinn grew out of that. Benny Hinn was a direct disciple of that woman. That's how Benny Hinn got to where he is. And, of course, John Hagee down there in Texas, he's also of this so-called charismatic school.
Yes.
These guys emphasize a lot of emotionalism and a lot of, let's say, theatrics in mm-hmm. their presentation. So they have these on-stage healings and, you know, heal, Jesus, heal, and people, you know, hit them on the forehead and they fall back to a couple of people holding them up. You see this on Benny Hinn today.
There's tons of them. You've got Oral and Richard Roberts. You've got, right. Although they do it a little bit more through their hospital. That's big right. income for them through Oral sure. Roberts University. And then you have Jimmy Swaggart. We had Jim Baker. At one time we had Jerry Falwell. You have an aberration of that same theme through Pat Robertson.
Absolutely.
You know,
Pat Robertson is a very, let's say, slick operator in this regard, because people don't understand how Pat Robertson's public, or I should say on-camera persona, substantially different from his off-camera, off-guard persona.
Mm-hmm.
When you just base your opinion of Pat Roberts based on what you see on TV, well, then he's everyone's favorite uncle.
Mm-hmm.
The guy is a nice-looking man. He talks with a soft voice. He seems very calm. He seems very logical. I mean, who wouldn't want to have Pat Roberts for your favorite uncle? But if you actually read what Pat Roberts has said over the years and
Pat
what he espouses...
Let's get the name right. Robertson.
Sorry.
That's okay.
If you actually study his words,
yeah.
You'll see that this is not exactly the man who he visually portrays himself to be, because he has said some remarkable things which are sounds much more like something a fascist would say, like Benito Mussolini.
Mm-hmm. Like, take Chavez out. Somebody should go take him out right now.
Yeah, right. He says things that to people in the know, and then when he's photographed for Time magazine for forget how long ago, he's holding his hand in his coat in a way that's he's he's expressing a Masonic symbol with his hands, and the purpose of that is to send the signal to all the insiders that I'm your boy, I'm with you. If you remember, when Nixon left the White House in the helicopter after when he was departing the White House after he resigned, he made a wave with his arm, in which he took his right arm and, starting from the left side over his shoulder, he swept his arm from left to right in front of him, as if to say, well, goodbye, folks. But the fact of the matter is that's a Masonic symbol.
Mm-hmm.
And he was required to do that as a kind of, a mea culpa.
Mm-hmm.
They required him to recognize that they, the Masons, got him out of office, and that he had to essentially kiss their butt with that symbol. And so, getting back to the evangelical group, their idea of the end times, as they're calling it, is that there's going to be this cataclysmic, fiery war to end all wars in the Middle East, and when it's over, Jesus is going to return. But they won't experience any of the strife of nuclear attacks. No. Why? Because they're going to be removed from the planet in what they call the rapture. Now, not all fundamentalists believe in the rapture, but the sizable majority of them do, because they've been pumping this rapture story for just about 100 years, for most of the 20th century. The scheme was hatched to follow this theme. It was hatched by the British Round Table in England in the last quarter of the 19th century. That's when they decided on the scheme. That's when they decided to create the Land of Israel, where Palestine rightfully was. They made all these decisions then, and the Rothschilds are pretty much at the helm of the game. They got Lord Balfour, the Prime Minister of England, in 1917 to put up this declaration of this Jewish state, which he called Israel. It's called the Balfour Declaration. And they finally actually created the Israel state after World War II. In 1948, the UN had a vote. All this was planned in advance. None of this was a natural evolution. What they also planned in advance, including the group we refer to as Zionists, Jews, they planned to see to it that Jewish people throughout Europe fell under the Nazi regime and were slaughtered, in order to use that event, the Holocaust, as a pry bar, as a political tool in the future after the Holocaust, to wield political power. And that's exactly what they've done. Many more Jews could have escaped Germany, for instance, could have escaped Poland, could have escaped, because Hitler was trying to get rid of them. In the beginning, he didn't necessarily want to kill them all. That wasn't quite the plan. That's evolved later. But he just wanted to push them out of Germany, and as he occupied Poland and so forth, he wanted to push them out of these countries. But there are Jewish Zionists who prevented much exodus that could have occurred for large numbers of Jews, because they wanted them to go through this murdering event in order to gain sympathy following World War II and to gain political power as a result of that.
And now, and to also steal their assets.
Absolutely.
Yes.
Right. It was part of a big picture, but they were betrayed by their own. I'm talking about, you know,
mm-hmm.
Jewish people were betrayed by their own.
Well, I would call them Ashkenazis, actually, which is which is Hebrew for German.
Right, right.
Okay. And that's part of that duplicity, the Hegelian dialectic. Right. They're masquerading as Jews.
Right, exactly.
And when their real cause is Zionism.
Yes.
And it's not the pure sense of what people think Zionism is. Zionism described in the Bible.
Yes.
Or, you know, this is following the dictates of, what's known as the Prieur de Sion.
Mm-hmm.
That existed in France.
Right.
Obviously, they inherited the French name.
Mm-hmm.
And they changed it to the Protocols of Zion,
right,
which maps out exactly what's happening right now.
Right.
The lying, the deceit, under the basic theme, the end justifies the means.
Yes.
Do whatever you have to do to get to the end.
Yes. Now, if you read Aleister Crowley's book, which I have a number of, he says the same thing. He essentially says, the law of one means do whatever thou wilt. If you decide it's okay, do it. And they're following. Now, let's also mention Henry Maykow has come out with a couple very stunning articles in which he talks about this element of Zionism, these fellows who call themselves Jews, who are in fact Satanist. And Pam Shuffer just sent me a piece a few days ago that also echoed the same notion. She referred to this group as Zabatian Zionists or Zabatian Jews. These groups are Satanist. And
mm-hmm.
we have to keep that in mind as well. Now, I'm not into being a Jew basher or a Catholic basher or anything like that. We're talking, though, about real entities, real people who describe themselves by these names.
Yes, yes.
And if they're Satanists, we're going to call them Satanists.
Well, you know, Ken, just briefly, if I can interject, they go back to Mongolia, where they're known as the Khazars. They are known in biblical times as the Kenites. And you know, their more modern version is neocons. So it's the same group. And
right.
And they're the ones that control the central banks and through bribery, through intimidation, blackmail, extortion, and every other avarice you can think of, they control the political parties of governments around the world.
And when you read the Talmud, which is their book of guidance for their behavior, it's not what Christians might think of it. If you haven't ever read the Talmud, you have no idea what's in there. But essentially, it's pretty much you can do anything that you wish to do to your enemy because it's okay, because he's your enemy. So lying is okay, cheating is okay, murder is okay. Everything's okay just so long as you've decided that this group is your enemy, and therefore he's not among the chosen. And most people don't know that. I certainly didn't know that when I was younger. I barely heard that word. I heard the Torah. Once in a great while, I hear the reference to Talmud. I didn't know what was in it until I actually started to read it. And then, my God, it's an eye-opener.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, getting back, though, to the theme is that cataclysmic events, many people, or a lot of people, are focusing on the date 2012, and so the Christian fundamentalist group see Armageddon. It's a story, it's a fabrication, it's a concoction, and people who are buying into it, at least a certain percentage of them, and I've read it often, and some of their promoters, are actually cheering on the advancement of the chaos in the Middle East in order to have the Armageddon event arrive earlier and sooner. And their attitude is, well, since biblical prophecy tells us this has to happen, That's part of the subterfuge, but they're brainwashed into believing that. They said, well, since this isn't Revelation, the Bible says it's so, we know we have to go through Armageddon, well, why not speed it up so we can get through it that much faster, and the glory days, and Jesus comes down to sit on his throne. That's how insane it's getting, but a number of those promoters, at least, have said those very words. They want to speed it up. Let's get on with it, you know, like the last guy who just left the White House. Bring it on.
Mm-hmm. Isn't it interesting, the political community and the sociological community in conjunction with the political community, in other words, those that are subservient to the government around the world, I should say governments with an S, have a common enemy, and that's terrorism. The people in ufology have a common enemy, and that's Planet X. You know, the Greenpeace people have a common enemy, and that's Yellowstone, and the possibility that it's going to blow like a volcano. Now, it is active. Or you have the people who are in the movement for sustainable communities have to face the reality of earthquakes and natural disasters. The people that are proponents of health have to fight chemtrails and the drug manufacturers. People for advanced energy systems have to fight the oil companies. Mm-hmm. There's every aspect of humanity has a bad guy waiting in the wings, an antagonist.
Well, I'm glad you mentioned Planet X. It's a good segue. Because another faction that is pumping hysteria and, more importantly, pumping anxiety and fear into people who are buying into these disinformation ploys are the Planet X, Nibiru, the 12th planet, the Red Nemesis. There's another guy from France who called the Red Planet Hercubulus, something close to that. Somebody sent me that book a year or so ago. And there was a time, when I first got on the internet with my website. Actually, I started my first version of my website in 1996, and I was under the domain name of another server. But then I established my own domain in 1998, but from the very beginning when I started the website, I had found out information because I had, by accident, come upon a website called Zeta Talk in November of 1995, and that website only came online in October of 1995, so I happened to hear a caller on the Bell Show allude to this website, and I had just gotten my computer that summer. It's the first computer I ever owned. So I went to that website to see what was there, and I became fascinated by the information there, and I spent a great deal of time reading it. It took me months to read it because there were so many articles and such a volume of files posted there, and so I printed them out in these large 3-inch binders, and I must have had about 8 or 9 of these 3-inch binders. There was so many articles that I printed out from them. And I read it all. I thoroughly absorbed everything that was on that site. And I became convinced by the information that was there. It seemed very reasonable. It seemed well-referenced and well-supported by corroborating books. For instance, they referred to the books of Zechariah Sitchin and the whole story of the Anunnaki alien group having visited Earth very long ago, about a half a million years ago, approximately 450,000 years ago, seemed perfectly plausible to me because he had all these. He's very scholarly individual, very scholarly writing. All these pictures of clay tablets and many artifacts from this period, from this area that was originally, which is where Syria and Iraq are today, for instance, but it was called Sumeria. And it made perfect sense because the civilization, the Sumerian civilization, just seemed to rise up overnight to a very advanced level, and that's not the way civilizations normally evolve. It's a slow process, but Sumeria just seemed to... So it certainly appealed to my sense of logic and reason that, yes, they had alien assistance. That's why they were able to achieve such a high technological strata in such a relatively short amount of time. And the other information about the genetic manipulation that took place in Eden and the whole the tale as told by the Sumerians, it certainly fit with the fragmentary story that you got of the creation story in Genesis, but it had much more detail in the Sumerian epics. For instance, the epic of Gilgamesh, etc., it covers the story of Noah, but in far greater detail than what we get from the Bible. So I was fascinated and largely drawn in and convinced by Zechariah Sitchin's books. I bought them all, and it took me a long time to read them, but as I mentioned, I like history, particularly ancient history. So the information in that Zeta Talk was presenting dovetailed almost perfectly with the sort of historical corroboration I was getting from Sitchin's book. And then there was newspaper articles that the lady who's managing that website put up. The Iris satellites spotted this mystery planet in 1987, a short article in Science News, and they dubbed it Planet X, so that's how we got the name today, Planet X. And then if you read Sitchin's book, he talks about this huge planet that used to exist that was called Marduk. It used to exist where the asteroid belt is today. And the idea is that the asteroid belt is made up of the fragments of this once whole planet. But this planet, the story goes, collided with one of the moons that are trailing behind this huge planet. That's called Planet X. It's called the 12th planet, or it's called Nibiru. It's a much larger planet than the Earth is, exceedingly larger. And it has moons associated that are revolving around it, but they travel with it. And this huge planet is traveling through two points in space. One of its foci for its orbit is our sun, and the other foci is another sun that's far out in the universe. They call it a dark sun, because they say it's not illuminated. But the story goes is that this Planet X, Nibiru, 12th planet, is making a 36,000-year journey around these two stars. And that every 36,000 years, when it swings around our star, it has caused cataclysms on Earth. And if it's a particularly near passage, which is still many millions of miles away, but the gravitational influence of this huge planet overwhelms the Earth's gravitational field, and it causes our Earth to flip on its axis, because like a magnet, you know, we'll be attracted to a more powerful magnet, and this causes what they call a pole shift, and that causes massive earthquakes, floodings, volcanoes pop off everywhere. You know, it's doomsday stuff.
Mm-hmm.
So that's the story, and it seems so reasonable to me. And I was getting so many other insights from this website about what was really going on in the skullduggery behind the scenes of the government. I just really told myself, my God, this thing is like an oracle. So I found myself believing most of what I was reading at this website. And I put this synopsis together called Coming Attractions, in which I really started out as a letter that I had written to my brother explaining two things. I explained to him the New World Order, because I just came to discover that in late 94 because I read Bill Cooper's book. From there I went to the books of David Icke and then John Coleman. And then this Zeta Talk site was talking about this planet, this 12th planet was going to return, was coming through on a return trip through our solar system in the late spring of 2003. And we better get ready, because this is going to cause a pole shift. It's going to cause worldwide earthquakes. Most people on the Earth are going to perish. And if the people who prepare to get in a shelter in a high mountainous area, have their own food, can produce their own electricity, etc., you have a chance of surviving. But unless you get into a total survival setup, you haven't got a prayer. Now,
so start digging your foxholes.
Start digging. This event never happened in late May or early June, even though the lady who was running the website said that she could, you know, that she had photos of this Nibiru against the sun, and it's, mm-hmm. So she was even crying wolf right up to the last few days almost. It never happened. Obviously. Now, I had built up a belief that this event was going to happen. I built up an 8-year-long belief. So I still had to wait for all of May and June to transpire until I really started to relax.
Mm-hmm.
Because I had psychologically really locked into this thing. Now, I didn't know it then, but I was brainwashed. I just didn't realize. As anyone who, you know, gets sucked into a cult and then gets out of it, it's easy to see when you're out of it, but it's not so easy to see it when you're in it. So, anyway, I thought the Zeta Talk would just disappear off the internet, but it didn't. And I stopped reading it entirely, actually. I stopped reading about a year before, or even 2 years before, because I had people, thank God, who I had, you know, faith in their ability to, their psychic ability. They told me it's not going to happen. It's a con story. This woman is under mind control. It's a CIA, NSA con job. Don't believe it.
Yeah, I told you the same thing.
Did, but I'm talking about at the time, Don. I didn't know you then. I'm talking about 2001 and 2002. At least I had two and three people who assured me, and I had a lot of faith in the ability of these people, that it's not going to happen. So, you know, stop worrying so much. But still, I had to, you know, go through it to be, you know, okay. What they did is that this website just put out, and I didn't even read it at the time because I was so disgusted with anything that had to do with this website. But it was reported to me by others that the lady who's running the website simply said, well, the Zetas needed to fool the government so that they wouldn't, you know, put us out of business. So we kind of ran this dry test just to kind of get people prepared for the real one, which is going to occur in 2012.
Mm-hmm.
So I wouldn't think anyone who was aware of Zeta Talk in the earlier phase of their first con would buy that, but a number of people did, and including one man who wrote a couple books. He was very generous to me. He included huge amounts of numbers of my articles and quoted me at length, and, you know, I was very honored by he put so much of me in his books, but he produced a second book, post-2003, in which he's predicting this cataclysmic event of Nibiru, the 12th planet, Planet X, coming through in 2012 and causing a pole shift, and virtually the same doom and gloom scenario that was painted by Zeta Talk that was supposed to occur in 2003, they now moved the date up to 2012. And I told this guy, I put up an essay about this called Planet X, the Sequel. It's on my website. That, you know, fool me once, shame on me, but fool me twice, then you're a damn fool if you accept the same cover story twice.
Mm-hmm.
So, I don't know how much time we have left with this show. I want to emphasize the fact that I personally am rather convinced that all cataclysmic events, which are projected to occur in 2012, are part of a disinformation con game. Now, I don't care whether it's the Armageddon scenario of the fundamentalists, or it's the Nibiru story of the Zeta Talk crowd, or it's Richard C. Hoagland, who just came out with a video a week or so ago that's titled something, The Hyperdimensional Election of Obama and 2012. And in that talk, which is available free on the internet, on Google, I'll be posting it on my website so people can get to it and read it, or you can just go to Hoagland's website and click the story at the top of his homepage. He spends the first hour or so on his knees appraising the Lord Messiah Obama, and then he spends the second hour talking about these great, unbelievable events that will occur in 2012. And all those websites, people like, Stephen Quayle, everyone who's spinning a doom and gloom scenario in 2012 is spinning a tale. I remember there used to be a priest who was on the Art Bell show often. His name is Father Malachi Martin. You probably heard him on the Art Bell show. Very nice sounding guy, very smooth voiced man. Sound like, you know, your favorite uncle there too. Very likable.
He was an exorcist with the Catholic Church.
Yeah, very likable personality, exorcist for the Church, etc.
Yeah.
And when they got onto the subject of the third secret of Fatima, which refers to the apparition of Mother Mary at Fatima in Portugal in 1917, and she had given the children three secrets, and two of them were revealed, and it had to do with the secrets had to do with the downfall of communism. I think one of the secrets had to do with the rise and fall of the Nazis in Germany. And the third secret was never revealed. It was supposed to be revealed by the Pope in 1960, but it wasn't revealed. And Malachi Martin refers to that in his talks with Art Bell and says that he has read the secret, he knows what it contains, but he would not reveal it publicly because the story is too frightening, it's too terrible to discuss. So he made a vow he would not reveal it, and he was not. But he did say it was too terrible that he couldn't talk about it. And there was a quote that I just posted in one response to a letter I put on my website, in which he was quoted that this event that was predicted to happen, the third secret, is so terrible that it's your worst nightmares multiplied 1,000 times, or some illusion like that. So he won't say what it is exactly, but it's the most terrible thing that ever has happened ever in the history of mankind on Earth. So that's so. Don't worry about it. I can't say, but it's more terrible than anything that's ever happened.
Yeah. So why mention it at all,
exactly,
except to create the fear?
Thank you. That is the purpose of it. That is the purpose. And you create more fear by not explaining it, but by saying it's the worst thing that could ever happen.
I think the most terrible thing that could happen on planet Earth is the removal of Mayberry RFD reruns on TV Land and TBS.
Okay.
If you want my opinion,
I'm using this segment of this show to hammer at this subject, is that people are being played here. There is hysteria, fear, and anxiety being manufactured. Now, there's an author, very good author. I've heard him interviewed a couple times on the radio, in fact. He wrote a book, I think he published it in 1986 originally. It was called The Gods of Eden, and the author's name is William Bramley. Now, it's an important book to read. I knew about the book for a long time, but I didn't actually get it and read it till about 4 or 5 years ago, although I was aware of it in the mid-90s.
Mm-hmm.
It's an eye-opener. This man researched back to the ancient world the stirring up of hysteria as a presage to a world cataclysmic event. And he goes down through the ages in which this theme of the world is coming to an end, get ready, was pumped up repeatedly. And then, of course, the event doesn't happen. And so the cycle starts again. And it might take a few hundred years for it to gain another, head of steam, and they'll repeat the story. And I'm reducing a 480 some odd page book down to just a few sentences. So you'd have to read the book to see the detail. But he's did a wonderful job, and that this idea of the end of the world for various reasons, or what almost is the could would be the end of the world. You know, mm-hmm. The great flood, the great fire, the great plague, etc. Because you got to remember, at the time in the Middle Ages, when the Great Plague was at its height, people thought it was the end of the world. I mean, they didn't have any other foci to base their reason upon. So they see people dying from them left and right. Naturally, they think it's they're told by the church, you know, it's the retribution of God for wicked behavior, etc. And it seemed to make sense because none of the nobility, or very almost none of the nobility, succumbed to bubonic plague. So they said, well, this must be so, and these folks, you know, apparently have the ear of God. Now, what they didn't know is that first they were getting treatment that was unknown to the common folks, and they were eating off plates made of silver. And they were drinking out of goblets made of silver.
Mm-hmm.
And silver is a natural germ fighter.
Mm-hmm.
So they were taking antibiotics pretty much every day. So even if they were bitten by the rat that was transmitting the disease, or the fleas, I should say, they didn't necessarily die from it because they were taking this antibiotic every single day.
Which is like, in those days, colloidal silver today.
Exactly. Exactly.
Yeah.
When you put water into a cup or wine, particularly wine, since it'll have, you know, it will, some of the atoms of the silver will go into the solution.
Mm-hmm.
That happens, you know, whenever you, water's a solvent, it's the perfect solvent, in fact. So you will, you know, if you leave the water in the cup long enough, if you drink the water, you'll notice a metallic taste. That's the silver.
Mm-hmm.
And when you drink colloidal silver, you notice a metallic taste.
Yeah, just like when you drink tap water, you notice the metallic taste
yeah.
of the aluminum byproduct.
The aluminum, right.
The waste products.
Exactly. Right, right.
Which are the fluorides.
Right. Okay, so anyway, I want to express this notion that don't quickly succumb to the end of the world, to the 2012 Armageddon, to the Mayan calendar, you know, especially don't succumb to predictions or comments or postulates by Ed Dames, of all people. He's a military government disinformation specialist.
Mm-hmm.
This is his job. This is what he was trained to do. The idea is to keep you frightened, to keep you in anxiety and fear, which, of course, makes it so easy for them to push along the New World Order fascist takeover agenda.
Mm-hmm.
Nothing they want better than people paralyzed in fear.
Yeah.
And instead of organizing and mobilizing to defeat, conquer, thwart, resist the New World Order, better to have you taking what little savings you have, because you just lost your job, and finding some, you know, hole up in the Ozark Mountains to dig to, and, you know, to get your survival thing all set, you know, to try to make it. I mean, much better you do that than actually look behind the curtain and see the manipulators and seeing what they're, you know, these fear schemes, these anxiety hysteria schemes are being manufactured to keep you on the ropes and keep you from not organizing to stop them from destroying, you know, this country.
Yeah.
So all of these 2012 scenarios, including the one that Richard C. Hoagland is trying to promote in his latest videos, are disinformation psyops stories.
Yeah.
Don't buy them. 2012 is going to melt into 2013, is going to melt into 2014, 2015. Now, that's not to say that the frequency of the planet isn't increasing. That's not to say that we might, as the New Agers say, gradually segue from the third into the fourth into the fifth dimension. If that happens, I'm all for it. I'm here and open. I don't believe anything until it does happen, though. But I don't resist that information. It's okay.
Yeah.
But I don't necessarily buy it either. I'm just a wait-and-see guy.
Mm-hmm.
But I know the Armageddon stuff is a lot of hooey.
Yeah.
And I know the 2012 and the rapture and all that, that's a lot of hooey. People got to stop buying into this nonsense and use their brains and their logic and realize they're being manipulated. Yeah.
Well, we had that same scenario happen at Y2K, and that was all based over computers, and it got everybody uptight that owned a PC because the computers were set to expire via the clocks in the year 2000. Well, they had to come up with some operating software to allow the PC-based software, and we're talking about Windows software from Microsoft, allow them to sell billions of dollars worth of software to avoid the data losses. Now, if you owned a Macintosh at that time, they were good until the year 3700. That's how far the calendar went into the future. So it's all a matter of perspective. Now, we will not succumb to that fear, but we have to succumb to the fact that it's the end of the show. So I want to encourage the listening audience to go to your website, and if you would give out your web address and a way for them to contact you, possibly via email or through your site, that would be appreciated.
Okay, thank you. The website is educate-yourself.org. Educate-yourself.org. Now, some people put in .com. It's not going to work. If they don't put in the hyphen between the word educating yourself, it's not going to work. You're going to get some other parking lot. You're going to get some website. I've had a lot of fun with this over the years. The only way you get to my website, educate-yourself.org. And when you get there, I have a contact us link that's spread around the website. You can click that. But I also have my secondary. I have two email addresses. My secondary email address is pitari@peoplepc.com. Pitari is spelled P as in Peter, pitari@peoplepc.com. And either one will work.
Okay, very good. Well, I want to thank you for being on the show tonight. Thank you for the kind compliments. Of course, they always reflect back onto the guests on the show. So, and you are one of those. You help make this show a success in many ways, and I'm appreciative of the way that you've been sort of standing behind my work, my research, and my my show and all of that. So I want to thank you and let the listening audience know that you will be returning to this show, Evident Footprints, on February the 12th, which is a Thursday.
Yes.
Don't be a stranger in the meantime.
Well, thank you as well, Doug.
And I'm sure we'll pick up where we left off somehow, or we'll have
some
new topic to discuss.
We sure will.
Okay, you take care, and we're going to say goodnight to our listening audience now. You have been listening to Evident Footprints on bbsradio.com. Special thanks to Donald and Doug Newsom for making Evident Footprints possible. Seth Hendrick on the sound. Also Don on the sound, I think, tonight. Sound was real clear tonight, Don, so thank you. Hope it was good on your end and on the listening audience's end. And most of all, we want to thank you, the listening audience, for tuning in. Join us again tomorrow evening when my special guest will be Dr. Qasim Khalil, and we're going to be talking about some health-related issues. You don't want to miss this wonderful information Dr. K is going to be bringing to us. In the meantime, I want to thank you, the listening audience, for tuning in, and I wish you a night filled with peace, love, and light, and have a good night.